Hello, Kirk Ludicky back with another audio file, podcast, whatever you want to call it. I stopped the other one short after we went over an hour talking about the expansion draft and players that were protected and on the various lists that were released this past Sunday by the 30 NHL teams for tomorrow, Wednesday night's upcoming expansion draft. And so I am back to kind of cover some of the potential draft picks for the Boston Bruins, because let's face it, this blog is Bruin-centric. So for those fans of other teams, hey, you know, you kind of know what you're getting into when you come to this particular blog site. I would love to be, you know, someone that covers the entire league, you know, for and focuses on all 31 teams and their draft needs and all that. But the reality is, as someone who grew up in the Boston area, I just have an affinity for the hometown team. And then furthermore, you know, doing my writing for the New England Hockey Journal, my focus has always been Boston Bruins centric in nature. And you know, it just comes down to time. And some of these players, you know, may or may not end up with the Bruins. So there's probably value if you're a fan of the Devils or the Hurricanes or the Golden Knights or, you know, whoever you happen to root for and whoever is bringing you here to this blog site. So I hope that this quick review of some of the players I think could be in the Bruins wheelhouse will be helpful to you, even if you might project them to your favorite team or even if you don't. This audio file is designed to save me a lot of typing. It's a lot easier to just record these and kind of just go off extemporaneously on what I think are, you know, my thoughts and various observations. Again, it's just one man's opinion. I don't really have particular insight this year in terms of who I really think the Bruins or, you know, who the Bruins are dialed in on. That's pretty much the case most years. This year, though, especially because of the nature of the draft, it's kind of wide open once you get out of the, you know, the top tier. I think there's a lot of players that certain teams, depending on where they're picking, are going to jump on sooner rather than later, and there's going to be some variance. I mean, once we, you know, get outside of the top 10 or so, you're going to start seeing some eyebrows getting raised as players come off the board where they're projected a lot lower. You know, players that are projected to go earlier are going to slide and what have you. So that'll be some of the fun of watching events unfold in Chicago. In case you aren't tracking the 2017 National Hockey League entry draft, round one begins Friday night in the United Center, Chicago. I will be there along with a lot of my Red Line mates and a lot of the media and, of course, all the teams that gather. And as I said on the previous audio file dealing with the expansion draft, we're excited. It's in Chicago. It's going to be a good time. So the burning question, you know, what one of the things that I talked about, I was recently on the Optional Skate Days of Yore's unofficial podcast, or I guess official, I don't want to sell the guy short, with Greg Ezell and John Fusile, and talked about the potential of Jonas Brodin being traded to the Bruins. Looks like that didn't happen. Wild protected him, and according to reports by Michael Russo, beat writer of the Wild, who's very well connected, Bruins weren't close. Okay. Bruins were interested. You know, I think that the sources were solid, but as we said, it takes two to tango, and the cynics out there, I'm sure, are going to say, well, the Bruins can't seem to close deals. And well, what else are you going to say at this point? That's a fair observation. I guess we'll just have to see things play out. Don Sweeney did 2 years ago close a couple of draft day trades in moving Dougie Hamilton and Milan Lucic, you know, out of the Bruins organization and to the Flames and Kings, respectively. So I think there's a good potential we could see something like that again. So don't count it out. NHL's in a trade freeze until after the expansion draft, and then talks will resume. Lots of rumors coming out of Vegas that they've got as many as 6 or 7 deals lined up, multiple first-round picks. We could be looking at maybe 4 first-rounders, which, you know, again, this is just interesting. And it goes to show you that teams, if they know what they have in a player, an established NHL player, and they know what he's going to bring them to the table, that's so much more attractive than the great unknown. And I know the draft Knicks, really, every year they get, you know, they're excited about drafting unproven young players and the great unknown and, you know, the upside and the ceiling and this, that, and the other thing, but I'll let this be an observation, you know, to kind of take it into account. NHL teams appear to be, until we see, you know, what actually does or doesn't happen, they appear to be taking the position of, if they can give up early picks to George McPhee and the Golden Knights in exchange for them not touching certain players and allowing them to hold on to them, even though they couldn't protect them because of the numbers game, but they'll end up taking someone else that's on that available list and leaving maybe the better player to stay in the fold of his current NHL team. That just speaks to what we're talking about here, where the value of players who are established and teams have a good handle on who they are and how they're contributing and what might be in store for them in a couple of years. It's easier to project that versus the 17, 18-year-old kid who's coming in via the draft process. Now, that's not to say that, you know, the teams are mailing in the draft. That's not it at all. But if the Vegas Golden Knights are picking four or five players in the first round, I think that in itself is a bigger indictment about where NHL teams and GMs and their scouts see this class going into it writ large. Because if there was a lot of value and teams really felt like they were going to be getting some outstanding players, and that it was was pretty relatively straightforward to project at least, and they felt good about it, I don't think you'd see some of these first rounders moving, you know, rumored, again, it's all allegedly, but these first rounders allegedly moving over to Vegas so that they'll take player A versus player B. And, you know, back in 1982, we saw something like this play out when the Bruins had the top overall pick that year, and Brian Bellows was the hot name and lighting it up with the Kitchener Rangers and all season. I mean, just imagine if we'd had social media back then, the hue and cry, because Harrison and coveted Gord Kluzak, the big, rugged Western Hockey League defenseman, and Minnesota North Star stepped up and traded him a couple of NHL journeymen in exchange for the Bruins taking Kluzak versus Bellows. And we all know what happened. Bruins take Kluzak 1, Bellows goes to the North Stars 2. Brad Palmer was one of the guys that was traded to the Bruins. I don't remember the other guy's name, but played, you know, kicked around for a couple games, but utterly forgettable impacts for the Bruins. And Kluzak's knee injuries, well documented, never became the player he could have been. In hindsight, the real gem in that draft was a guy named Scott Stevens, who won a couple picks later to the Washington Capitals in 82. But again, you don't have a crystal ball when you're projecting the draft and these things happen. So even though this draft is allegedly shallower, and I talked a little bit about it on the Days of Yours podcast, but you know, it's all relative. You know, drafts are shallow, they're quote-unquote weak. You're comparing these draft classes to recent years where you had a generational talent in 2015 in Connor McDavid. You had a very good, you know, a player that probably, if it not been for McDavid, let's say Eichel had been eligible for the 14 draft, he probably gets picked ahead of Aaron Ekblad. And in 2016, you know, probably still would have been Austin Matthews, but it would have been a closer competition maybe between Matthews and an Eichel. But Eichel went 2 and 15. You had Matthews and Laine 1, 2, and 16. I mean, that's heck of a spread of talent at the top two picks in consecutive years. You don't always get that there. You know, you might get what, you know, so this year what you have is some good talent at the top and Hischier and Patrick, or Patrick and Hischier, depending on how you look at them. But they're not viewed as being in the same league as McDavid, Matthews, 1 and 1 in 15, 16, or even Eichel, Laine, 15, 16. I mean, it's just not there. So there are going to be some star players that come out of 2017. They may or may not be picked early, but at the end of it, just like in 1996, which was touted as a potentially historically bad class and has kind of played out that way, you still have gems. I mean, you have the Zdeno Chara coming out of that draft in the third round, and Thomas Cabrelet, I talked about. I mean, he was an all-star talent. He was like a seventh rounder that year. You know, 96 had some really, you know, Chris Phillips was the top overall pick. He played a long time in Ottawa, was a serviceable guy, but for being the number one overall pick, he was he was pretty pedestrian, but you certainly had some real busts that year. You had Alexander Volchkov, who was just a terrible player, top three guy out of the Barry Colts for the Washington Capitals in 96. You did get some hits. You're always going to get some hits. You're always going to find some players in a given draft. But it's the depth and the percentage of players that go on to have impactful NHL careers, and those players being spread throughout the draft. So you've got quality at the top, the middle, and then the later rounds that really distinguish a draft class. So 2017, guys, is not being seen as a overly strong draft. So the onus is on the teams and the scouts to hit on the picks they do have, and hopefully some of them will catch lightning in a bottle if they're not picking at the top. Jersey and Philly are going to get, assuming they take Patrick and Hischier, or Hischier and Patrick, depending on how you look at it, they get two very good players. But are they franchise cornerstones? That remains to be seen. Probably not. They're more complementary star players. They have all-star potential. But when you're talking about a Connor McDavid or an Austin Matthews, even a Patrick Laine, those guys are just on a different plane right now. And to see what they all did as rookies coming in and just having the kind of impact they had right away, it would be unfair to expect the same of Patrick or Hischier. So with that in mind, let's kind of get down to it. Boston Bruins are picking 18th, made the playoffs. Actually, were originally in the 19th spot, and then thanks to the Nashville Predators being a lower seed going all the way to the Stanley Cup Final, thank you, Nashville, they moved past the Bruins passing the second round of the playoffs and making it to the Final Four. They jumped past the Bruins and pushed Boston to one pick earlier. With a little more luck, it could have been a couple picks, I suppose, but pretty good deal. 18 is not a bad spot to be. You have to remember that's just four spots away from where they were a year ago, and they were a non-playoff team. So some of the players, I think, that make sense for the Bruins, again, this is assuming that Don Sweeney doesn't move the pick, because I've talked about it before we've talked about it on the Three Amigos podcast, and I also talked about it on the Days of Yore podcast. The optional skate, which is the Bruins have a lot of prospects right now, and Don Sweeney's got some decisions to make. Teams can only have 50 players under contract. Now, some of that is mitigated by the fact that junior players don't count if they're signed, as long as they're not in the minors, and there are a couple of other provisions. But the bottom line is, you can have a bunch of players. You can have more players signed than your 50 contract limit. But the 50, it's all a matter of where the 50 contracts are. So as these players, though, start to turn pro and the team's hand is forced and these guys go into Providence, then those contracts start counting. And so it's a balancing act. And because of the CBA being the way it's set up, incentivizes teams to sign players at certain ages, to sign them early so that those contracts can slide potentially. The teams have to make bona fide offers to retain the rights of CHL drafted, major junior drafted players. They have to sign them within 2 years. All of these things all kind of add up. And if GMs aren't careful, they can find themselves without a lot of flexibility to make trades later on if they're at that 50 contract limit, right? And so this is why, much to some people's chagrin, teams can't just load up on draft picks year after year, and draft 10, 11, 12 guys every year, because at some point they have to turn pro, they have to be signed to contracts. And when you factor in your existing contracts on your NHL roster, that's almost half of your total contracts right there. And then that gives you a little over a half to spread between, with your minor league team and in a few cases, depending on where those guys are playing. Again, Europe and junior hockey, they're not going to count against you unless there are certain provisions that allow for, if you've signed players and they end up in going back to Europe, then and they're still under contract for you, then that can't does count against you, right? So anyway, the CBA is pretty convoluted with this stuff. If you don't keep up with it, it can get complex. I'm not a lawyer. But the bottom line is, you know, teams have to manage that. GMs have to be cognizant, and you don't want to be trying to make trades and being up at your 50 cap maximum, because it's all about flexibility. So that answers the question as to why, you know, the whole idea of stockpiling picks year after year and just having a bunch of prospects in your system and just holding on to them is not necessarily the best strategy. So at some point, I really believe that Don Sweeney is going to have to move some people out. What that's going to look like, how many he's going to move, what he's going to do, is he going to move the first round pick, who knows. But if ever there was a year to trade a first round pick in a draft and get some NHL help, so maybe you trade the pick, you trade a prospect, and maybe you trade a roster player, for example, and you're shedding three potential assets to maybe get one player back, right? And so now you've trimmed the fat a bit, and you've exchanged three potential contracts, more than likely two that are counting against you if you're trading a prospect that's at the pro level and a roster player, because that draft pick you make, his contract's not going to count against your 50 limit, but he's still an asset and he's still adding to the numbers you have in your organization, and you're bringing back a player. So I think there's wisdom in Don Sweeney perhaps looking at that and trying to make some moves along those lines. You don't want to overpay and just, you know, gut your system. And the challenge he and his player development people and his pro scouts and his amateur scouts are going to have is in really assessing who are the guys that are worth moving, that you can afford to move and still get value for, and who do you need to make sure you keep so that you're not watching a player turn into a star wearing someone else's uniform and you had him. And those are tough. I mean, you want to know, you know, just ask John Ferguson Jr., who's you know, GM of the Providence Bruins now and one of the Bruins front office executives. Back in 2006, he was GM of the Toronto Maple Leafs, and he wanted an established NHL goalie, and he had a couple stud young prospect goalies in the Leafs system, and he agreed to trade one Tuukka Rask to Boston for Andrew Raycroft. And that's your classic case of a make sure you do the evaluation right and you trade the right player, because you trade the wrong player, and that can have a really significant impact that sends seismic waves throughout your organization. So thanks, JFJ. I know that's a little, you know, it's a tough analogy for him, but, you know, that happens in hockey. That's the business of hockey. If you don't have the ability to see into the future, you don't have a crystal ball, you know, those things are going to happen, but you can mitigate that with a good, strong organization, good scouting and good player development, having a good handle and pulse. And sometimes it's just the gut feel and making the right calls. And the Bruins certainly have quite a few enticing assets at present, but I think they do have room to streamline that organization and kind of move some of the guys that maybe they don't feel are going to, in the long run, be players for them, and try to get things. And, you know, you want to get assets now to make your team better now, but you also want to maybe defer those assets to the future and to keep building that flexibility to be able to make trades or to make those picks down the road and space out your player development timeline so that all of these young aspiring NHL players aren't trying to fight their way onto the team at the exact time when there aren't many roster spots. So definitely a balancing act. Well, 20 minutes in and I still haven't talked about 2017 players. So on that note, let's go to a guy that I think would be a fine pick for the Bruins at 18. First of all, the Bruins will probably go with the best player available strategy. That's kind of been their MO, although in recent years, and I've said this before, it's probably getting old. In recent years, BPA and needs have both factored in to be one and the same. You certainly saw that with Charlie McAvoy. I think Jake DeBrusk in 2015 is a good example of that. Jakob Zboril. I mean, they were looking at needs, and their needs just happened to intersect with best player available. But in 2017, I don't think it's going to be the same kind of situation. So if you had to kind of look at best player available potentially, but who also fits that, you know, what do you want to do as a need? How do you want to strengthen your organization? A player I have a lot of time for is Robert Thomas of the London Knights, Ontario Hockey League. Not a big guy, pretty average size, about 6 feet, 190 pounds. Very good skater. He's got excellent quickness and speed and agility. Checks all those blocks. He wins races to lose pucks. He gets to pucks quickly. Tremendous hockey IQ and vision. Able to thread the needle with soft passes, and he's a competitive, heart and soul kind of guy. Not a big finisher. I mean, he doesn't have a lot of goals, and that's kind of maybe one of the, you know, when you look, take his average size and the fact that he doesn't finish a lot of plays, he's more of a pass-first playmaking center. You don't want to say Adam Oates, because, again, you don't want to be comparing a kid to a Hall of Fame player, but, you know, in that kind of tilted to, you know, between goals and assists ratio, you know, Thomas is kind of that guy who's more of a table setter, but I really like him. I think he's, you know, his game screams Boston Bruin to me. Yeah, heavy on pucks, a character guy who wants to do anything to win, is a leader. He's probably going to wear an A with London this season. And, you know, just a good all-around hockey player. He's a hockey player. That's what I like about Robert Thomas. So I think he'd be an excellent choice. Another guy along those lines, we're talking center. Like Thomas, not particularly big, but strong, thick, durable, low center of gravity, is Swedish center Elias Andersson, HV71. I've talked about him elsewhere. I just think he's a really good fit with the Bruins in terms of his playing style. He's got a bit of an edge to him. Not a dynamic skater, but he's not a bad skater. Again, he doesn't have the big height. You know, he's not 6'1", 6'2", but because he's thick and he's strong, he'll get up under guys that are bigger and kind of knock them off pucks, knock them off balance, and he's tough to knock off stride because he digs those edges in and he boxes out and he can protect the puck pretty well. And he's so strong and heavy on it that, you know, you'll watch guys kind of cross checking him in the back and trying to knock him off the puck, and they have a harder time. He's got really good balance, and he digs, you know, he digs his edges into the ice and makes those quick cuts. And so he's able to kind of create space by shaking defenders. Good, you know, NHL caliber snap, wrist shot. You know, he's able to just kind of get the shot off quickly and on target. Scored 9 goals in the Swedish Pro League last year at the top level for HV71. So, you know, you don't score a ton of goals in the Swedish Pro League. You know, nobody ever puts up huge points. So for an 18-year-old kid, in his first year of eligibility for the NHL draft to get 9 goals, it's pretty good. I mean, he's playing against men, so he's more advanced physically, and he's got the NHL bloodlines. His dad, Nicholas, played in the NHL, and then I mentioned this before. His uncle Mikhail Andersson, had about a 700 game career with, you know, several teams: Hartford Whalers, you know, Buffalo Sabres, Hartford Whalers. Spent most of his career with the expansion Tampa Bay Lightning in the early 90s before heading back to Sweden. So, you know, Andersson is just one of these. He's not sexy, he's not dynamic, but he's probably going to play and play pretty well. Maybe he's topping out at 20 goals and 50 points, but, you know, he's versatile and he can play in a lot of situations for you. One player I didn't profile in my New England Hockey Journal article, I'm kind of kicking myself for not doing so, is Isaac Ratcliffe. This is a 6'6" or 6'5", 6'6", 200-pound winger. Plays for the Guelph Storm of the Ontario League. Pretty good points. He's pretty good. I mean, he's 6'5", almost 6'6". So you don't say these guys are great skaters because it's just a different. I mean, they just look different. I mean, big guys, sometimes they'll be working their butt off and they just look like they're coasting, right? Because of the physics and the dynamics and the mechanics behind their skating. But he's pretty. I mean, for a guy that big, he's pretty mobile and fluid. And that certainly is attracting the attention of NHL teams. Reasonably skilled player, not a high-end guy, but certainly one of those players where you look at him and you say to yourself, well, you know, you're not looking at necessarily what he is now, although what he is now is pretty darn impressive. I mean, he had 28 goals in 67 Ontario League games. And, but, you know, what's he going to be, right? Is he going to continue to progress and develop? He's so physically dominant and ahead of many of his peers at the junior level, but there's going to be a narrowing of the gap a little bit. as his peers get bigger and stronger and physically mature into adulthood. But he's soft on the, like, he's got, by soft on the puck, I mean, he's got some nice soft skills with it. You know, he's got decent hands and good competitiveness. I mean, I don't think he's a, I think he's got room to improve his skating, you know, certainly get a little more fluid and agile. And I don't think he's a high end creative hockey sense kind of guy. But you know what? You put him on someone's wing that is a creative playmaker, and boy, he could do some damage. I mean, he'll drive the net and take pucks to the net hard. And you know, he's not a snarly, like if he was a nasty, snarly, in your face kind of guy, you'd probably be hearing about him in the top 10. But you know, as it stands right now, I mean, he's just one of these big, skilled guys. And I know some folks will be a little gun shy because of the Jimmy Hayes situation. He has similar size, and well, he's a better skater than Jimmy Hayes. So Isaac Ratcliffe is a guy that I wish I had talked about more. Another player who's probably going to be there at 18, although I would be surprised. No, let me talk about two guys. One's a forward, one's a defenseman. Small guy's probably going to be there when the Bruins pick. And that is, at forward, we're talking about Kailer Yamamoto. And defense, we're talking about Erik Brännström. Yamamoto is, I mean, he's about 5'8", 160 pounds. He's not your elite blazing Johnny Gaudreau type skater, but he's the same kind of, just makes plays all over the ice and so smart and creative and hustles around and just makes things out of nothing because he just wants it more than the other guy. Little pepper pot of a player. I just really like his game. I know a lot of people who've seen him really like him. I just don't think he's going to be a great fit for the Bruins because they just tend to shy away from those smaller skill guys. I mean, I just go back to last season. They had a shot at Alex DeBrincat, didn't take him. Had a shot at Abramov, didn't take him. They ended up taking Oscar Steen in the sixth round. I just don't think the Bruins place a lot of value on small guys early on. And, you know, it is what it is. It's the kind of what they, you know, it's kind of what they embrace and value as an organization. Maybe they'll reverse the trend and they'll like a kid like Yamamoto. I don't even know that he'll be there, but most mock drafts, many rankings have him, you know, after 18 in the 20s somewhere. Some team's going to get a very good player in him. I'm convinced of that. He's just the kind of player you need and you want in this day and age. But, I participated in a media mock draft over the weekend, and Toronto, which picking one spot before Boston, I had the Boston pick. Toronto picked Yamamoto, and so I couldn't believe my good fortune as I looked up and Martin Nikesh, the Czech centerman, was still on the board, and I thought he was tremendous value at 18. So I grabbed Nikesh. I was getting ready to take Elias Andersson. I really thought he was going to be the guy that I was going to mock, and made sense. I was thinking either Robert Thomas or Andersson, but couldn't pass on Nikesh. I don't see that playing out on draft day Friday. I don't think Nikesh will be there. He'll probably be taken anywhere after 10, round 12, maybe 13. I think he'd be a good fit for the Winnipeg Jets if he's available to them. It wouldn't surprise me to see Nikesh go to a team like that. Certainly would give them a nice, you know, potential star in waiting to go with Mark Scheifele, who's certainly young enough. I mean, if you can have a young in their, you know, young 1-2 punch at center to go with some of the other high-end talent they have at forward, building in Winnipeg with just so many good skill players, you know, you do that. So, but Nikesh would be great. Nick Suzuki is another guy I think would be a really nice pick for the Bruins, but I'd be very surprised if he drops. The other small guy I was talking about at defense is Erik Brännström. Plays for the HV71 junior team. He's drawing a lot of favorable comparisons to Cale Makar, who's probably going to be a top five selection out of the AJHL, headed to UMass, Minutemen. Just a tremendous, the best offensive defenseman in the draft. I say hands down, bar none. Other people like Miro Heiskanen, as the best defenseman overall, but I'll tell you, I think it's very close between the two, but Makar is just a dynamic offensive presence. I think he's your best point getting defenseman. And when you look at, you hate to compare, you know, guys to Erik Karlsson, who's one of the best players in the world, and deservedly so. But you know, when you look at what guys like Karlsson did to the Bruins in the first round of the playoffs, I mean, why wouldn't you want potentially a guy like that? Now, people will say you have Tory Krug, you have a couple other undersized guys. You don't need another one on the blue line. And I don't disagree with that. But if you think Brännström could even come anywhere near the kind of impact Karlsson has had, then you really got to think about it. So it'll be interesting to see where Brännström goes. I mean, he's projected anywhere near, you know, 18 to, you know, some services like Redline Report, for example, have him closer to 10. So we'll see. I don't think Timothy Liljegren is going to drop to 18. I just believe some team along the way is going to snap him up because he's just such a good skater. Even the concerns about the hockey sense and the tough season he had, someone will take him. I don't think the Bruins will have to agonize over making that choice. But I would just offer to you, the Bruins are big on hockey sense with their defensemen. You got to be able to process and read the play and do all that. And I think Liljegren's got some question marks there. So don't be so sure that if he's there, he would be a slam dunk for the Bruins, because that's one big red flag that the Bees are, you know, they have been staying more and more away from players who aren't smart, don't have the head or the CPU to play the position. And he may or may not have that issue. It may have just been a tough season for him. But, you know, I know last year there were questions with Jacob Chychrun and questions about how well he could process the game. And look, he played in the NHL, but I don't think he's really alleviated those questions yet. I mean, he might have made the NHL, but he's playing for the Arizona Coyotes, and I think he still has some questions to answer in terms of how good a thinking man's defenseman he is, and so we'll see. But I just think the Bruins tend to stay away from guys like that. A couple guys that are, you know, certainly in the mix at 18, and one player I'm leery. I've seen him mocked to the Bruins a lot, and he appears in the 20s a lot, but I've kind of been told that there are teams that are picking closer to 10 to 15 that really like this kid. So I'm skeptical that he would even be there at 18, but he's certainly a Bruins type player. That's Ryan Poehling, center. He's played some wing out of St. Cloud State, was the youngest player in college hockey, true freshman, didn't turn 18 till early January. Good size, about 6'2", 200 pounds. I don't know that he has a real high-end skill set, but he's such a heavy, you know, player who's smart and plays with energy. I think he's got more skill than he gets credit for. He didn't put up big points, but he's the youngest player adjusting. But, you know, in international competition, whether we're talking Ivan Hlinka in August or the under-18s in April, Poehling really kind of stood above his peers and was one of the straws that stirred the U.S. Team's drink in both tournaments. And they got silver in the Hlinka, just couldn't get over that dang hump, lost the gold medal game in August, but they made up for it by winning gold, in April at the U-18s. So Poehling's a winner. I think he would certainly appeal to the Bruins. I just would be surprised if he's there. And then Jason Robertson, who's a left winger, scored 42 goals for the Kingston Frontenacs of the OHL. Good size. People are concerned about the skating. You hear that skating. I don't know. I mean, I look at him. I've only seen him on film, but he looks fine to me. He seems to get from A to B just fine. Seems to anticipate the play very well. And I don't know. He's just a shooter. Shoots the lights out. 42 goals. That doesn't happen by accident. And he was on a team that didn't generate much offense. So teams were keying on him, saying, you know, hey, look, if we stop Robertson, we stop the fronts, and they still couldn't do it. I think there's a heck of a lot to be said about players like that, and I just tend to think that he's undervalued. He's not going to go anywhere near top 10, which is where we have him at Redline, but he should be a first-round pick, and you know, he would certainly be someone to consider. Now, whether the Bruins would or not, don't know. So those are kind of the guys I'm looking at around 18. As you notice, don't have many. Didn't talk about too many defensemen, and they could do it. Juuso Välimäki would be an interesting pick if he were available, but he's another one I don't think is going to drop from the Tri-City Americans. Not flashy, but productive and just steady two-way guy with good skills and would slot over on the left side. And Connor Timmins is another defenseman that's certainly raised some eyebrows playing with Sault Ste. Marie. Bruins saw him quite a bit, I'm sure, looking at Zach Senishin, checking on his progress. And he's just another one of these smart, productive defensemen. I like him better than Nicholas Hague. No disrespect to Nick Hague. Big, huge, six foot six defenseman who can skate and has put up some points, but I have questions about his overall ability to play the position. And I just think a player like Connor Timmins projects a little better as a pro. You know, with Hague, if he doesn't hit on his projection, he's probably not going to be much of a player. Whereas Timmins is versatile enough that I think even if he doesn't hit more of the offense and special teams role for you, he can still contribute on the bottom pairing and be a solid, you know, defensive defenseman, maybe not a shutdown D, but a solid defensive defenseman who can play some minutes and be put out in situations the coach will trust him in. So those are the first rounders. We'll talk a little bit into the second rounds and beyond with a few players to keep an eye on. Bruins are in an interesting spot where they, if you talk a needs pick, they sure could use a goalie or two. And there are some good goalies. I think the big four, we're talking Jake Oettinger, we're talking Keith Petruzzelli, Michael DiPietro, and Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen. Those are your highest rated goalies. Ukko-Pekka just cracks me up. We call him UP, Ukko, I don't know. He's an interesting one. He's kind of all over the map. Some people really like him and think he could be the best goalie in this class. I personally am a Jake Oettinger guy, and I also like Keith Petruzzelli a lot. But what those guys all have in common is size. They're that big, 6'4" and taller. You know, Oettinger and Luukkonen are 6'4", and Petruzzelli's only 6'5", maybe closer to 6'6". They're that modern high, archetype, the big fluid guy that just takes up an enormous amount of net and can play a lot on his knees and still cover the corners. I know my colleague Kevin Paul DuPont at the Boston Globe hates that, but unless they change the rules, I mean, that's the modern game. A lot of these goalies are playing on their knees and making guys, beat them by picking the corners, but you have to be 6'4", 6'5", 6'6", to be able to do that and make that style work. And so, the 6'1" goalies, they're having a harder time. Now, Michael DiPietro, the Windsor Spitfires, which had a huge Memorial Cup tournament, arguably the MVP in carrying them, even though he wasn't named, wasn't the MVP. Dylan Strome was. But he's just a player who, and talking about DiPietro, just made all the big critical saves at crunch time and played like a top talent, even though he's only 6 feet tall. I think he's a solid second rounder, probably going to go before 53, but you never know. Some other interesting options for the Bruins, if they don't go goalie, go look another direction, maybe best player available. You've got Morgan Frost, also Sault Ste. Marie, very good skater, Boston Bruins type guy, plays with energy, hard on pucks, smart two-way, industrious guy. Josh Norris, who more and more I'm seeing ranked in the first round. That kind of surprises me. I really like Josh Norris. He's a spark plug, and I think the best player on Team USA, National Team Development Program this year for the draft. But I didn't think he was a first-round pick per se, but maybe he is. I don't know. But if he was there in the late second, I think Norris would be great value. It seemed like any time USA needed to lift, he would come down, score a goal, or drive the net, make a play, do something to kind of give his teammates a lift. Jarrett Anderson Dolan fascinates me. He's another average-sized center, one of the youngest guys in the draft. He's a 12 September birth date, so he made the cut by 3 days. And plays with a lot of pace and intensity and speed, and kind of didn't have the greatest under 18 tournament. I mean, he was more thought, highly thought of playing out in Spokane with Yamamoto. So maybe he slips down. He would certainly be a guy to consider. He's got an interesting family story. I'm not going to go into it because I'm about talking about hockey players. I know some people, we'll take the personal backstory and maybe play that up a bit. I think Jarrett Anderson Dolan's a hockey player, first and foremost. I don't care what his family background is, personally. I think it's fine. that he has a personal story and people are jumping on it and sharing it. But, you know, if you're interested in it, go check it out. It's an interesting story, but I don't think that has much to do with why I would be on board with Jarrett Anderson Dolan. You know, inclusivity is great, but that's not the, you know, that doesn't win you hockey games. Okay. Good players with good character who can fit into the system and do the job are what's going to win you hockey players. And I'll just tell you, I've only seen him on film, but Jarrett Anderson Dolan is a hockey player. So would definitely be interested in having that guy join the organization if he was there at 53. Doesn't look like he's going to be. Cole Lind is a guy I thought might be available in the first round. Looks like he's slipping. Would probably be a reach at 18, although I did profile him. 6'1", about 180-pound winger, so he's light. He's lanky. He's a late 98, so he's an older guy, but he scored 39 goals with the Kelowna Rockets this year. Really good shot, really good release. Pro stick, I mean, just able to do a lot of moves and handle the puck at speed. Just solid, solid player. Has some upside, but 18 is probably overvaluing him, but yeah, you never know. I mean, who knew that Zach Sinishin would be a top 15 pick in 2015, yet there he was. So Cole Lind is someone to keep an eye on. Maxime Comtois. What the heck happened to Maxime Comtois? This was a guy who was a third overall pick in the Quebec draft a couple years ago. Looked really good at the under-18s in Grand Forks. Seemed to be destined to be a top 10 pick. Was even pushing top 5 in some lists. Big, good size, good skill. Not a dynamic skater, but got to where he was going. But, you know, good hands. Real agitating physical guy. You know, everything you kind of want in a power forward. And then it's just his offensive game regressed. And he struggled this season. And so now, you know, he's... Some people still think he's going to go in the first round somewhere, but I, based on people I'm talking to, I think he's better value in the second. If he somehow slipped down to 53, which I don't think he will, but if he did, boy, he'd be a heck of a pick there. Another guy who's ranking right in around there where the Bruins are picking, and it wouldn't surprise me to see them jump on him, is Marcus Davidsson of Djurgården, Swedish kid. Pretty, you know, another average size guy. He's only about 6'1", 190. So he's, you know, he's got enough of thickness in his build that he'll be able to handle the pro game, but he's certainly not a quote unquote big guy or a small guy. You know, he's good skater, good skills, good hockey sense. Like, he's good at everything, but like the production just isn't there for him. So I'm kind of left scratching my head. But when you talk about these European players, what's appealing to them and the Bruins right now is it's about holding the rights. You know, they can hold the rights and not be forced to make a decision in terms of signing them for a while. And I think that's, you know, for a team like the Bruins right now that has so many prospects in the organizations, that could be like a tiebreaker for them. That could honestly be something where they go, well, you know what, if we draft a Canadian major junior player in 2017, we're going to have to make him a bona fide offer within a year just to retain his rights. And then we'll have to sign him before June 1st, 2019. Whereas a European kid or a kid that's, you know, drafted out of the USHL or junior hockey, you know, tier two hockey somewhere and is headed for the NCAA, you can wait on the decision. So we've seen the Bruins do that recently. Well, the last couple of years where they've kind of, or at least last year, 2015, they drafted, you know, quite a few Canadian Hockey League, you know, major junior players. So we might, you know, last year they stayed away from it. I think they were the only team in the whole entire league that didn't draft at least one kid out of major junior. So they could draft one or two, or they could stay away again. But I just think they're going to be building that standoff for a while so that they can be more patient and stagger the impact of these prospects as they turn pro and come up, and they're not, their hands aren't forced to have to either move them and trade because the kid's unhappy because he's blocked, or have to not re-sign them, you know, as RFAs and let them go to unrestricted free agency, because it's just, you know, the numbers game doesn't justify keeping them, and then you find out you had a good player and you lost him. So these are the challenging things. So this is where a guy like, you know, Marcus Davidsson is going to be appealing, because if they're looking at him versus a Mackenzie Entwistle, for example, Mackenzie Entwistle plays for the Hamilton Bulldogs of the OHL. He's a right winger, big, strong, power forward. He's got to get, he's lanky, So he's got to put a lot of weight on, and he didn't really score a whole lot. So there's questions about his, you know, he's got the tools, but the questions about the finish and the production. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what would the Bruins do in a situation like that? Or, you know, do you take the major junior player in that situation? Or do you look at a guy like Marcus Davidson? Maybe you have Entwistle slightly ahead of Davidson, but you take Davidson because he gives you more flexibility. That's going to be an interesting thing to watch and see about. Alexei Hipponiemi, he's a guy that is ranked like second rounder, but my Mark Stodinger, my red line colleague, Western Canadian scout, is just convinced that this Swift current Broncos player and Finn, who doesn't have a lot of size, but just has some real wiggle and dynamic element to hit, you know, offensive element to his game. He's convinced that he is going to be, you know, a potential first round, you know, like slip into the late, you know, either late first round or you know, early second round, you know, surprise some people given where some of his projections are. Just a really interesting, you know, skilled player who, you know, is admittedly very small and light right now. You know, he's only about 5'10", 150. But boy, can he skate and handle the puck and put people on their heels. So he's another one of these players where you don't look at what he is now, but look at what you think he's going to be in about 3 years, and he could be something. Ben Maragis is another player I've talked about. Something about this guy tells me the Bruins have, you know, they've got to somehow be interested in him. First of all, he's 6'1", 180, so he has room to fill out and grow and add some mass, but he'll probably be 6'2", 200, north of 200 when he plays as a pro. Can really skate. He's got NHL caliber wheels already. I would be a little leery of taking him in the second round, but he's probably a solid third rounder. And as we know, the Bruins traded Zach Rinaldo. Or traded their third rounder for Zach Rinaldo. So if you're waiting for the fourth round, you're probably not going to get Ben Maragis. So it all comes down to, you know, how much do they like him and would they take him 53rd? Another guy who you see valued later on, but could certainly end up being solid value there, even if it appears to be a quote-unquote reach on paper initially, is Morgan Geeky, second-year eligible. He's a July 98 birthday who was passed over last year, but scored a lot this year when he was forced in the lineup when Michael Rasmussen went down in January and missed the rest of the season. Geeky really took it to another level. He's smart, skilled, more of a playmaking center, but you know, he plays that Boston Bruins style, heavy on pucks and, you know, just one of those guys that can really get things done. Let's see. I'm just saying a lot. Sorry about that. Between the and you know, I've been doing a lot of filler words lately, so I do apologize, listeners. I'm usually a little more prepared than that. Max Gilden is an interesting defenseman, USA, Team USA, Texas kid, headed to UNH. I'll admit I did not like this kid's game at all at the beginning of the season. I said, here's a toolsy player who has no toolbox, just couldn't seem to think and process, and he would miss open lanes, and by the time, you know, he would recognize the lane was there, it was closed, and then he'd try to make put the puck into the closed window and turn it over. And I just said to myself, man, this guy is just not. I mean, he's got impressive abilities and natural physical gifts, but I don't think he's got the head and the stick to do it. But boy, did he really come on at the end? Put up a lot of points and certainly had a big breakout under 18. So he's one of these players where when you talk about that last impression being important sometimes and really going a long way to helping you out, Max Gilden certainly did that. And it will be interesting to see how high he rises. I think he was probably he was a fourth rounder, fifth rounder at midseason, even though his tools clearly was a second round guy for me. But after seeing him on film at the under 18 and then kind of looking at the production, yeah, you know, he could go anywhere from late second to third, solid third rounder, probably go sooner rather than later, just because, again, teams are looking for these big, skilled defensemen who can move pucks, join the rush, mobile, quick enough to get back in retrieval, all these things. Those are in demand. And, I would be leery because he wasn't consistent, but at least he finished the season strong. So if you believe he's on the upward path of his trajectory, and that the worst is behind him, then he could be a really good get, or he could regress. But you know, kind of, it is what he is. You're not going to take a Max Gilden and not realize he's got some warts and some things to work on. Some other players out there that I happen to like: Riley Walsh, small but really good offensive defenseman. I should say smallish. He's not tiny, but you know, pretty average to slightly below average size. But he's just a rink rat. Eats, breathes, sleeps hockey. Good kid. He wants to be a player. Scored 30 goals and 69 points in 30 prep league games this year as a defenseman. So, guy's got some real potent offense, but he did it at the prep level. Got to see him in the USHL a bit, and I think he more than held his own. Would have liked to have seen him a little more. Didn't get a chance to help the Steel win the Clark Cup, whereas Ben Maragis did, because he had to go back for academics at Proctor Academy. So, unfortunately, you know, Riley missed out on that, and I know that probably ate him up inside to see his Steel teammates lifting the Clark Cup and winning that championship and doing it without him. But, boy, if he'd been on that team, that would have been a really interesting run for them, because, I mean, he adds a whole different dynamic to any blue line he's on. Mason Shaw is a guy, you know, I talked about on the Days of Yore podcast. He's a gritty little son of a gun, plays for the Medicine Hat Tigers, undersized, but good skill, good speed, creates problems, agitator. I like him. Probably not going to be a very high pick because of the size, but some see a little Brendan Gallagher in him, and so those little guys with a chip on their shoulder, they can play. You know, whether it's Brad Marchand, Brendan Gallagher, you know, take your pick. They're out there. Interesting to me, I've been just kind of asleep on this guy. He's my area, Jack Bedini, USHL. He's the kind of player, every time I would see him, you noticed him because he's fast. He's got good size, although not great. Like, he's not huge, but he's tall enough and he's thick, you know. But the skating, you know, he was always around the puck, but he couldn't finish off plays. And I would say, well, you know, I like that he's involved and I'm noticing him. I would look at my notes and I'd say, you know, Bedini made, you know, three or four, you know, good passes or, you know, cut to the net with authority, but, you know, the puck would come to him and it would, you know, hop over his stick or he'd put it into the goalie's crest. And, you know, I just didn't see the offensive pop. And then I saw Chicago late in the year and he was excellent and he scored a breakaway shorthanded goal. I was like, wow, you know. And then I saw him in the Clark Cup and he was just took it to a whole nother level offensively. And so now all of a sudden, you know, I'm hearing buzz that Jack Bedini is a guy who's probably going to get drafted. I think he's in Bob McKenzie's top 100 and you know, he's one of these risers and he's not on Red Line's list. And, you know, when you look at it, yeah, I probably, you know, probably should have jumped on him a little earlier, but it happens where some players will just kind of hit their stride. And if you're lucky enough to where you saw enough in him earlier that you liked him and at least ranked him, then he moves up your ranking. And so in Bedini's case, you know, he's headed to Harvard. He's a New England kid. I think he's from Connecticut. I don't know. He's a bit of a mixed bag for me, but I liked the energy and I liked the compete, and he's a champion. He was part of that Chicago Steel Clark Cup champion in the USHL. And he's certainly a guy to keep an eye on. Another USHL player I have a lot of time for is Mario Ferraro, a defenseman, little small. He's going to be with Cale Makar at UMass, but boy, can he skate and pass the puck and carry the puck. You know, he's not just a puck mover, he's a puck carrier too, and he's feisty and competitive. He might be on the small side, but that doesn't dissuade him from going out and battling for pucks and you know, doing those kinds of things. So those are some players. I like more guys. I've talked at length about Noah Cates on the Days of Yore podcast. I don't want to belabor the point, but you know, I've seen Noah Cates anywhere from 78 on the Hockey News draft preview, which is very early. I don't think he'll go that high, but I like that. I mean, I think he's certainly every bit as good to be ranked in that area to more like the 120s and 30s, and I don't know. Noah Cates is going to be drafted. He's a good kid, good creative winger, and really stood out late in the season at Omaha. Got to get stronger like most kids his age. Got some maturing to do, but really, I like his ceiling. I like his potential. And I think as he matures and grows up, he's going to be a really good player and teammate and be someone that people respect. On the flip side, one guy I'm not all that enthused with, but wouldn't be surprised to hear him, you know, to see him drafted perhaps as a goalie, is Maxim Zhukov. Now, you know, Russian factor, you know, I don't know about that to Boston. And I wouldn't be overly enthused because he was a real feast or famine for me. More famine than feast with the Green Bay Gamblers of the USHL this year. I just see a guy who, you know, has size, has athletic ability. Some scouts really think he's going to be great. I see a guy who just didn't seem to have the mental toughness and the focus to be consistent enough. I was more of a Caden Primo guy, Lincoln Stars, also USHL goalie, also a bit of feast and famine. But I just think he's a little more dialed in. He was a little more consistent for me. I just think Primo, who's headed to Northeastern, would be a better bet if you were drafting a goalie between the two of them. But Zhukov is worth mentioning. Grant Mismatch is another guy who's kind of hanging around. He is what you call a hard skill player. He doesn't have a ton of size, but he plays big, winger, gritty, will score. His thing is twofold. One, he's very inconsistent because his intensity and compete wavers. And two, he lets his emotions get the best of him. He's one of these guys that just hasn't, you know, he'll just snap. He has no personal discipline. So he'll take selfish penalties, take himself off the ice in key situations because he can't get control of his emotions, it seems. And so me personally, I don't have a lot of time for guys like that. I look at that and I say, you know, I understand you're competitive, but a guy like Mismatch, there are stretches where he'll go where he's not competitive at all. And he's just kind of floating or he's standing around watching and wants other people to do the dirty work and dig the pucks out for him. So again, I don't buy the fact that he's so competitive that he just snaps and can't keep himself from, you know, punching a guy in the head, you know, in front of the ref or high sticking someone or slashing someone. You know, to me, he's selfish. He's a selfish player who, you know, takes bad penalties when he feels like it because he's mad about, you know, someone took the puck away from him, so he'll slash the guy. Or his teammate will be in a scrum and he'll be on the outside and there's absolutely no reason for him to jump in and hit someone, but he'll do it, you know, after the whistle and then he gets the only penalty. I mean, that kind of stuff, you know, it just drives me nuts. There's such a fine line in hockey between winning and losing, and games are won and lost, can be won and lost literally with a guy sitting in the penalty box in the sin bin because he lost his mind and took a bad penalty. So Mismatch, I mean, he certainly has ability and he is a skilled, productive, talented kind of forward, but I would be surprised if the Bruins rolled the dice with him. And honestly, I don't think he's in the range. I think he'll go somewhere between 30 and 40 because someone will take him. I mean, he is definitely, like I said, a hard skilled guy. I just disappointed. He's been more down than up for me when I've seen him, but I certainly wish him the best. He's not a bad kid. He's a Minnesota kid. Kind of a funny interview. You know, he's got a good personality. I just too often saw him snapping and losing his mind and hurting his team with bad penalties. And it just isn't enough to offset the goodness he does, or it does more to offset the goodness he does, I should say, than anything else. And so on that note, we're approaching a minute. Yeah. I wish it was a minute, right? An hour. And I think I've covered a wide variety of players that, like I said, geared toward potential Boston Bruins selections based on the style some of them play. Some of them are not good fits, but I just liked them anyway. So hence me talking about Yamamoto and Brännström and maybe Jason Robertson. But most of those guys, I think, you know, make sense for the Bruins at some point. Whether they fit at those exact slots, I couldn't tell you. Whether the Bruins will actually take them, I don't know. But that's part of the fun of watching the draft. and seeing who's going to slide, who's going to rise, who the player is going to end up being. Last year, the dominant topic of conversation, at least that I was having entering the draft, was is it going to be McAvoy or Fabro? And, you know, certainly interesting to see how it all turned out. And a year later, looks like it was a pretty good deal for the Bruins. But this one will be a whole new world. We'll see if they keep the pick and what happens if they do. So if I was a Bruins fan, I wouldn't get too comfortable and wedded to that 18th pick. Even if we go into the draft day and nothing's happened, it ain't happening until Don Sweeney and everybody, and Cam Neely and Scott Bradley and Charles Jacobs are headed to the podium with the new Adidas Bruins jersey sweater in hand and ready to make that pick. So if they hold on to it, great. You know, I certainly am not about throwing a pick away, but I just think it would make sense for them to potentially move that pick and get NHL help and shed a couple of additional assets rather than pick yet another young kid who's unproven and will have, you know, likely have to wait a couple of years. But you have to build through the draft. And, you know, if we weren't talking about draft picks and prospects, what would we be talking about, right? So on that note, about an hour and a minute, and I really appreciate your time. I hope you've enjoyed this. I hope you found this informative. I know it just scratched the surface, and there's probably a lot of players that I brought up that you wanted me to talk about or didn't talk about that you wanted me to. Sorry about that. It would just go on and on. But so I'm going to leave it there. But for scoutingpost.com, this is Kirk Ludeke. Again, thank you. And I will be in Chicago. So look for my Twitter feed at K Ludeke, L-U-E-D-E-K-E 2-9 is my Twitter handle. Be doing a lot of that. May do some scouting post stuff, although it's always a little more of a challenge to do that with the schedule being what it is. But I'll probably get a post or two up. I was able to do that last year in Buffalo, so I should be able to do a little bit of commentary on who the Bruins end up with. And, you know, next big step, I guess, later today, because I'm recording this podcast on Tuesday night, but I'm going to hang it Wednesday morning. Later tonight, we'll find out, finally, who the Vegas Golden Knights, the core of their roster is with the expansion draft. So, expansion draft Wednesday. We'll probably have some NHL awards news to go over, too. That's going on. And then NHL entry draft, round one Friday, and rounds 2-7 Saturday, and then another hockey season in the books, and we reset for July 1st, and the official start of the 2017-18 season. So, again, thank you so much for your time. I hope you enjoy these. If not, well, you probably stopped listening a long time ago. So, on that note, I'm out, and we will catch you when we catch you, I guess. I will try to do one of these after the draft next week sometime. All right. Cheers, and thanks. Bye.